In many ways, abortion was on the ballot this past election, and there's reason for concern. There are many counties, cities, and states who have radicalized abortion, and thousands of tiny babies will continue to lose their lives every day. Which is why the Ministry of Preborn is on the front lines for at-risk babies and mothers with unplanned pregnancies. Preborn sponsors clinics positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country by providing them with resources that they need to rescue babies. Preborn continues to expand their life-affirming care. Their end-of-year goal is to equip 10 more clinics with ultrasound machines. These life-saving machines cost $15,000 each, more than most clinics can afford. When a woman meets her baby on ultrasound, she is twice as likely to choose life. And when she comes to a preborn clinic, she will also be embraced with God's love. $28 sponsors one ultrasound, and now through a match, your gift is doubled. How many babies can you save? Please donate. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say the keyword baby. Or you can go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible, and Preborn has a 4-star charity rating.
We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here on the program. Glad to be with you today. AFR.net is our website. Yes, it's Tuesday. And yes, Walker is here with you. Rick and I were actually planning to co-host this show today together, but Rick's a little bit under the weather, so to speak. And so he said, hey, you're already planning on being on. Why don't you just host the program? And so I am. Here we are. It's our Tuesday edition of the program. And I'll actually be traveling the rest of the week for an AFA trip. So I won't be with you live for the rest of the week. But we'll see you next week on Monday's live edition of the program. Let's turn our attention to the scripture. Proverbs chapter 31 is where we are this week. Proverbs chapter 31. Looking at this passage, there's a lot packed into this chapter. But looking at verse 10 and 11, it tells us the value of having a godly wife. Verse 10 and 11 says in Proverbs chapter 31, an excellent wife who can find, for her worth is far above jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. That's Proverbs chapter 31, verses 10 and 11. A couple other housekeeping items. We're heading to Israel and Greece back-to-back in the spring, March of 2026. That registration is actually going to close December 1st. So if you want to go, or if you're interested in going to the land of the Bible or going to Greece, doing the Footsteps of Paul trip, those are back-to-back trips, two separate trips, but back-to-back. We're going to be doing those both in March of 2026. Registration is going to close on December 1st. So you've got about 4 weeks to decide whether or not you would like to go to Israel or Greece for the 2026 trip. You can go to wildmangroup.com to check out more information about that. Also, we're promoting Operation Christmas Child. This is going on through November 24th. National Collection Week is November 17th through the 24th in, of course, the month of November. So that's coming up just around the corner. If you want to pack a shoebox, you can. If you would rather donate to Samaritan's Purse and have them pack the shoebox for you, you can do that as well. And if you want to find out all of the drop-off locations for the shoeboxes in your community, then you can simply go to SamaritansPurse.org, SamaritansPurse.org/OCC, SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. Find out all the information you need for the Operation Christmas Child shoebox campaign going on right now through November 24th. Well, the government is still shut down, and some people are sad, some people are not. If you're missing your first paycheck and you work for the government, you're probably pretty upset. This government shutdown, as has happened in the past, reveals that there are certain aspects of the federal government that if they were to shut down tomorrow, many Americans wouldn't even miss anything, wouldn't miss any critical services, wouldn't even know that the agencies are shut down. So I think the government shutdown in many regards does highlight how we have many agencies and departments and positions within the federal government that just aren't needed, that just are not necessary. And when they're shut down, nobody knows that they're shut down. So that's one thing that has been highlighted over the last 4 weeks with this government shutdown. Another thing that is beginning to develop is the fact that some were concerned that Republicans would have to cave, that Republicans would just have to give in to the Democrat demands because the pressure would become so much. But what's actually beginning to happen is the Democrats are beginning to face a lot of pressure from their very own voters and their very own voting bloc. Many groups and unions that traditionally support Democrats are coming out in favor of President Trump and the Republican spending plan and urging Democrats to reopen this government, because these unions are hearing from their workers or their union members that are federal employees saying, look, we got to get this thing open. What are we doing here? We've been out of work for 3-4 weeks. Now we're not getting a paycheck. We can't pay our mortgage. We can't pay our car note. You know, we're having to go to the food bank. That's not an exaggeration. I've read reports on that. And it's time to get this thing open. What are we fighting about here, right? Well, for the Democrats, they're fighting about getting Biden's, all of his programs reinstated and getting funding for illegal immigrants. That's one of their top priorities as Democrats, is reinstituting the Obamacare subsidies, which, why are we subsidizing Obamacare? Well, we're subsidizing Obamacare because it doesn't work. It's not affordable. So what do? We subsidize it through different kinds of tax incentives to lessen the blow that is Obamacare. Why don't we just get rid of Obamacare? Let's stop subsidizing it. So that's one thing that Republicans are doing here, is stopping the subsidies for Obamacare. And then, of course, Democrats want funding for illegal immigrant health care. That's another thing that they're pushing for with this spending bill, which these are all Biden-era policies that they're trying to put back in place. Now, the first thing I want to play here is the Air Traffic Controller Union, or the Air Traffic Controller Association, basically the union. They did a press conference, I believe, earlier this morning, talking about how it's time to get the government back open. Right, remember, this is coming from groups that traditionally toe the Democrat Party line. I mean, the unions, we talked about the teachers' unions yesterday, the unions historically, at least in modern history, have been very pro-Democrat, right? They've been in bed with the Democrat Party, supporting Democrat candidates, not all, but most of these unions. And here comes the Air Traffic Controller Union, not criticizing President Trump, not criticizing the Republicans, just saying, hey, we got to get this government open, clip two.
Day in and day out, that's now the life of an air traffic controller. The people tasked with making the impossible possible are having it made impossible by not paying them again. So the message is simple. In the shutdown today, there is no excuse that these hardworking men and women are showing up to do this job and to not ever know when they're going to get paid again. So we need America's help. We need you to stand up, and we need you to say enough is enough in this shutdown and ensure that we can move this forward, because we do not want to be up here telling you the sad stories. We want to be up here telling you how we're moving this system forward, how we're bringing in more air traffic controllers than ever, how we're modernizing this system to, you know, serve the American people. So again, cannot stress enough, if you want to take action, contact your congressional representative and tell them in the shutdown today.
Well, there you have it. That's the Air Traffic Controller Association saying in the shutdown, contact your representatives. Let's get the government back open today. There's been pretty severe delays around the country in the airline industry. I traveled recently. Thankfully, there wasn't any delays, but I've heard from several others who have sat in airports for 2, 3, 4 hours waiting on their plane to take off because there's not enough air traffic controllers to safely bring in and see off the airlines, the different airplanes at these various hubs. And when you're looking at Atlanta, Charlotte, Dallas, these are major hubs at JFK, and you take out a handful of air traffic controllers for various reasons, that's a major problem. So that's beginning to be problematic. We're about 3 to 4 weeks out from Thanksgiving, and we'll see how long this carries on. But Democrats are underwater on this. This is not popular amongst voters. And you think it would be, considering how radical their base is. And maybe this is popular amongst kind of the Antifa rebel group amongst the Democrat Party, those who only know how to tear things down. They don't really know how to build anything. You know, Orange Man Bad, that type wing of the Democrat Party, which does exist. Maybe this is popular amongst that group, the AOCs of the world, but the government shutdown, broadly speaking, is not popular amongst voters, even regular Democrat voters. And the polling is showing this. The polling is revealing that Democrats are hurting pretty bad at the polls because of this government shutdown. And this is 1 week out from a couple statewide elections, New Jersey, Virginia, to be specific. The last thing Democrats need is to be hurting at the polls before Election Day in a week from today in Virginia and New Jersey. And then there's various local races around the country for our school board and other positions. But this 3-minute report from CNN is pretty revealing. And you'll have to listen to the numbers, and then we'll talk about them after the fact. But pretty much Democrats are very unpopular when it comes to the government shutdown. Let's listen.
Starting with Republicans, how has the shutdown seemed to have affected their political standing?
Yeah, you might think, given that the Republicans are in charge of both the House and the Senate, that a government shutdown might actually hurt the Republican brand. But in fact, it hasn't. If anything, it's been helped a little bit. Take a look here, the shift in net popularity versus pre-shutdown. Among the when we're looking at the Republican Party overall, that brand actually up 2 points. That's within the margin of error, but clearly it hasn't dropped. Come over to this side of the screen. Look at the net approval ratings for Republicans in Congress. It's actually up 5 points since pre-shutdown. So what we're seeing here is the Republican brand in Congress has actually improved somewhat compared to where we were pre-shutdown, despite the fact that Republicans control. And that's the math that John Thune and Mike Johnson are looking at is, well, hey, why should we give an electorally speaking when our brand has actually improved a little bit?
Now, we say their position is getting better. With whom?
Yeah, okay, with whom? So I think it's two groups that it's so important to keep an eye on. All right, change in the Republican Congress's net approval rating versus pre-shutdown. It's rallying the base for sure. Look at this, the net approval rating up 12 points versus pre-shutdown. But it's not just with the base. It's also with the middle of the electorate. Look at this, among independents. It's up 8 points as well. So we've got a situation here where Republicans with the shutdown are actually rallying their base, but it's also something that's not hurting them with the folks in the middle. If anything, it's helping them with folks in the middle. And this is the type of math that if you're Republicans, you like to see, right? Because something could rally the base, but alienate those in the middle, or something could rally those in the middle, but alienate the base. But the truth is, we're not seeing that. What we're seeing is the Republican brand has actually gotten better among independents, and it's also gotten better among Republicans as well, that Republican brand when it comes to those in Congress. So again, what's the electoral reason that Republicans would give in at this point?
And Democrats, of course, they have their eyes on the midterm elections. Yeah, we have elections 1 week from today, but what Democrats in Congress are mostly focused on are 1 year and 1 week from today from the midterm. So how do Democrats, how are they positioned right now?
Yeah, so I mean, look, the general congressional ballot, which traditionally Democrats have done really well on, and if you look at this point back when Trump was president the first time around, Democrats were up 11 points. Look at where it is now. Democrats are ahead, but they're actually only up 3 points. This is, in fact, the worst position Democrats have been on in a generic ballot at this point in midterm when there was a Republican president in the last 20 years. And this is no different from pre-shutdown. So Republicans aren't losing on this metric either. They become more popular, and they're actually in a pretty good position for them historically when it comes to the generic congressional ballot.
This is a concerning number for Democrats, are you saying?
This is a concerning number for Democrats because it's considerably worse than they traditionally do in midterm elections when there's a Republican president.
Considerably worse.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, my friend.
CNN's quote, considerably worse for the Democrats looking at the last 20 years. This is important. Now, we are 12 months out from the midterm election, and we're a couple months out from the primaries. But nonetheless, once again, can the Democrats self-correct? No, they can't. They just cannot do it. I don't think they can. Democrats are underwater by 9 points compared to previous midterm cycles with a Republican in the White House. All right. So at this rate, Democrats will lose the midterms, meaning they will fail to regain the House and obviously fail to regain the Senate. That's a big test. Republicans holding the House and the Senate in 2026 is a big capital B, capital I, capital G test. We cannot have Hakeem Jeffries' impeachment a repeat of Nancy Pelosi's witch hunts. We just cannot have that in the last 2 years of President Trump's presidency. And you cannot have Chuck Schumer in charge of the Senate because nothing gets through, including judicial appointments. You just can't have it. We'll be back.
Hey, my name is Wesley Wildman.
And I'm Walker Wildman.
And we're brothers, and our family have been leading tours to the land of the Bible for more than 30 years.
Coming up in March of 2026, we would love for you to join us for something very special, a Footsteps of Paul tour, a journey through Greece.
We'll walk exactly where the Apostle Paul walked, through Athens, ancient Corinth, Philippi, and Thessalonica.
You'll enjoy unforgettable experiences and meaningful fellowship with believers and with Wesley and Walker.
And we'll eat well, laugh a lot, and yes, eat well again. And most importantly, we will grow in our faith as the Bible comes alive before your eyes. You'll get to see the very things that we read about or that your pastor talks about in church.
The Footsteps of Paul Tour is March 17th through the 24th, 2026.
Register today at wildmangroup.com.
That's wildmangroup.com. We can't wait to see you there.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Psych. Maybe you wish it was Rick Green, but it's not. And it's me. It's Walker. And it's Tuesday, and I'm here filling in for Rick on my own show. So Rick and I host the show each week. I'm with you Monday, Wednesday, Friday. He's with you on Tuesday, Thursday. And it works out great for our schedules. And but Rick's out today. So I'm in and glad to be with you on the program. Let's jump into a topic that I've actually been refraining from for some time. I've been refraining from for a variety of reasons. But let's enter the fray of, and unfortunately, we're going to give attention when it's probably better if a lot of this was ignored, but unfortunately, it's hard to ignore everything, right? Especially items that have moral, biblical implications, etc., and that directly relate to the content that we cover here on the program. But let's talk for a little while about the evolution of Tucker Carlson and maybe Candace Owens, if we have time, and where they are today, because I used to love Tucker Carlson. And there's still some things about his hosting that I like with his personality and his style. And when he was on Fox, I mean, this guy was hitting him out of the park on Fox News, doing great interviews, proving some great points, highlighting things that others weren't talking about. That was Tucker Carlson. And slowly, over the last few years, Tucker Carlson has just gone off the deep end. In some areas, not all, but in some areas, he has just gone off the deep end. And I'll kind of break down specifically what I'm talking about, because instead of being like Tucker Carlson and using generalities and never using facts and pointing out what what I'm saying, we're going to actually try to point out exactly what I'm talking about when I'm saying Tucker Carlson has gone off the deep end or has gone astray or has, you know, really really regressed in recent years. Let's just break this down. The first thing that stands out to me when it comes to Tucker Carlson is his approach and style of interviews. All right, and this doesn't have to be a negative, but it can be. It can be a negative, and I think with Tucker Carlson, it has become a negative. And that is the fact that Tucker Carlson rarely has people on his program that he disagrees with, which is not, once again, not always a problem, because I don't really have people on this program that I disagree with. Maybe occasionally Rick will take calls, and on some of the other programs on AFR, we'll take calls where people can call in and say something that they don't like about us or they don't agree with, and then we can counter it. But that doesn't necessarily equal bad, right? Not having opposing viewpoints on your program. That's not necessarily a problem. But it is a problem when you don't have counter viewpoints on your program and you also don't use facts when you're making broad assertions on a program. Especially when you're making broad assertions about individuals, ideologies, movements, and organizations. And what really kind of showed this was when Tucker Carlson did have Ted Cruz on his podcast. And they were debating the pro-Israel, anti-Israel viewpoint. They got a little bit into the theology of it, although not very deep. And Tucker Carlson really didn't seem to know himself much of the biblical history and the biblical truth around the people of Israel and the nation of Israel. Ted Cruz tried to give, you know, a Christian viewpoint, an evangelical Christian vantage point of his view of Israel and the importance, the historical importance of Israel, the spiritual importance of Israel. But Tucker Carlson just kept interrupting Senator Cruz and didn't really let Senator Cruz answer the questions. And so my point in bringing this up is that Tucker Carlson loves badgering people. He loves making broad general assertions that are hard-hitting on the surface. But when any opportunity arises for someone to push back and counter what Carlson is asserting, then Tucker Carlson doesn't let them talk. And that's what I got out of the entire, like, 90-minute to 2-hour exchange, of which I watched the entire thing, with Carlson and Cruz, is it wasn't really an intellectual conversation. It was really about when Carlson felt threatened or Carlson felt that Cruz was making a valid point, he would interrupt him and he would speak over him and do his, you know, snarky laugh that Carlson does. When Tucker Carlson gets uncomfortable and people start challenging him, he does this uncomfortable, awkward laugh that draws all the attention away from the content and onto his body expressions. You can see it every time on his podcast when he's talking about something. But I'm going to get a little deeper than this. That's just kind of a general how he conducts his interviews, how he conducts his program, and it's worked for many years. I mean, he was a top show on Fox News. But when he left Fox News, I guess he got more comfortable with this drift into really taking a wrong view of things, And then when anybody opposes or counters what Tucker Carlson says or does, then they're against free speech or they're Bibi Netanyahu's, you know, mouthpiece. That's the new talking point, is you're just a Zionist, right? So you're opposed to us, you're a Zionist, or you're a CIA operative, right? These are some of the talking points. So anybody who criticizes Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, and others, you know, they're either against free speech, They're for cancel culture. They're Bibi Netanyahu's mouthpiece. They're paid, bought and paid for by the Zionist, etc. Or they're a CIA asset. That's another theory that they love floating around is. But let's break this down and get into some specifics. And what really got my attention was how Tucker Carlson handled the Charlie Kirk assassination. Charlie Kirk was assassinated, obviously. Everybody knows that. Within days of the Charlie Kirk assassination, Tucker Carlson began implicating, he wouldn't directly say this, but he was implicating the Israeli government and Netanyahu on Charlie Kirk's death. And Tucker Carlson began discussing private conversations that he was aware of with Charlie Kirk and others on the fact that Charlie Kirk was beginning to grow kind of weary with Israel and their leadership as far as constantly defending them and then, you know, some of the human rights issues that were coming up in Israel with the war in Gaza. And how do you keep defending them when some of this stuff seems indefensible, talking about human rights abuses that were being reported out of Gaza? And so Charlie Kirk, according to these text message threads, which have been released, he was just kind of expressing a weariness with, you know, how do you keep defending Israel, even though it's the right thing to do to defend Israel, but how do you keep doing it when it seems like their political leaders, in some cases, are not making good decisions? And they're doing things, the military is doing things that some are somewhat indefensible. So how do you work through this? So that was basically what Charlie Kirk was discussing in these threads. But Tucker Carlson just capitalized on Charlie Kirk's death, which is, it's so inhumane and wrong to think about using someone's death to make any kind of point about yourself and your personal viewpoints. I mean, it's clear, based on Tucker Carlson's own statements, that he is not friendly to Israel. And he's definitely not friendly to Israel's current political leadership, including Bibi Netanyahu. But when Tucker Carlson used Charlie Kirk's assassination to somehow make this speculative point about Netanyahu and Jews and the Israeli government, to me, that was it. That was kind of the last straw where I said to myself, I'm done with Tucker Carlson. I mean, this guy is so far over the deep end. Let's listen to Tucker's own statement. This is going to be clip 5, where Tucker Carlson begins revealing private conversations with someone who was just assassinated. So he's breaching confidentiality, revealing private conversations, and trying to insinuate that the Jews and Israel had something to do maybe with Charlie's death. Clip 5.
He did not like Bibi Netanyahu, and he said that to me many times, and he said to people around him many times. He felt that Bibi Netanyahu was a very destructive force. He was appalled by what was happening in Gaza. He was above all resentful that he believed Netanyahu was using the United States to prosecute his wars for the benefit of his country, and that it was shameful and embarrassing and bad for the United States, and he resented it. Didn't hate Netanyahu. He wasn't out there with a placard saying that, but he certainly expressed that to me and a lot of other people. And there's no question that Bibi's defenders on the internet will call me a liar or a kook, but that's a fact. And enough text messages exist that I think it can probably be verified in pretty short order. Not that it needs to be, because that is true. Shortly after that speech, there was a very intense attack on Charlie, and to some extent on me, not that I really noticed, but on him, I have no donors. He had $100 million worth of donors. And so, because he was involved in a different project from just yapping on the internet, which is what I do for a living, he was dependent to a great extent on his donors, of course. It's a nonprofit. And they went after him and tormented him. Not all, of course, many were supportive, but the ones who were offended by my speech, and there was a small, very intense group who were, tormented Charlie Kirk until the day he died.
All right. Well, there you go. So Tucker Carlson uses Charlie Kirk's assassination and his death to reveal private conversations he's had with Charlie Kirk with the sole point of showing that Charlie Kirk was skeptical or in some cases didn't like Jewish people. I mean, that's literally what Tucker Carlson just used, that 2-minute monologue to, quote, reveal. And my question would be, to what end? All right. What did we just gain from Tucker Carlson not letting Charlie Kirk speak for himself, but speaking for Charlie Kirk, who has since passed at the time of this recording? To reveal that there were Jewish donors, pro-Israel donors, that were pressuring Charlie Kirk to be more pro-Israel and to distance himself from Tucker Carlson. Like, why does that matter? In the hours after Charlie Kirk's assassination, in the days after Charlie Kirk's assassination, why is this even a point? This is an internal feud that happens all the time in organizations about different interests and who should be at your event and who should be speaking. I think it's extremely low and wrong for Tucker Carlson to use Charlie Kirk's death. You notice he doesn't do this. Carlson doesn't do this when Charlie Kirk's still alive, saying, oh, let me tell you what Charlie and I talked about. No, because you don't do that. You don't talk about private conversations without people's consent. But Tucker feels the liberty after Charlie's dead. So if it's not right to reveal private conversations without the consent of the other party, these are friends. These are not enemies. This isn't Project Veritas undercover recordings. No, these are private messages amongst friends and peers. And if it's not acceptable to reveal that when someone's still alive, do you think it's somehow respectable and right to reveal private conversations when they're dead? I mean, this is just patently absurd. And I don't understand this fascination that Tucker Carlson has with everything anti-Israel. And I've got more clips we'll play after the break. Dinesh D'Souza actually breaks this down pretty well. I've got a 2-minute clip from Dinesh D'Souza we'll play in the next segment. I've got another clip from Tucker Carlson that we'll play where he's saying that anybody who's a Christian and supports Israel is a heretic. That's his words. But he doesn't back it up with facts or let me quote these Bible verses for you that prove my case. No, he just makes a generic, broad statement on his own show. And then he doesn't back it up. This is not intellectual stuff. And this is actually the hardest falsehoods to refute are the ones that are non-intellectual. The hardest falsehoods to refute are the ones that are non-intellectual because they don't rely on fact, on reason, on evidence. They are outlandish on their face and have zero substantial factual backing, and thus refuting them in and of itself sometimes is an exercise in futility. And I've seen this 1,000 times with people. They make outlandish statements that cannot be proven or equally disproven. And then they make their entire career out of that MO. We'll be back in a few.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to the program here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us on the program. I'm Walker Wildman. You can watch the live stream over on Facebook, At the Core on Facebook, on X, on the AFR handle on X, and we have the video up live at stream.afa.net. All right, let's continue breaking this down. I got a couple more clips left for this segment, but we're talking about this straying of Tucker Carlson, who was once a very well-respected, very sought-after, very much watched, millions of viewers on Fox News. I loved watching his program. It was one of the best on Fox because of the guest he had on, and they made some excellent points, and he really platformed people who were fighting for good things, for righteous things, and I respected that. But ever since Tucker Carlson has been on his own, running his own podcast, he's become increasingly, he's really gone increasingly astray, and doesn't seem to be self-checking, doesn't seem to be checking himself, and you know, being drawn back into truth. He just seems to continue drifting toward wrong viewpoints, immoral viewpoints, and inaccurate viewpoints. And what typically happens if you kind of track people or you know people in your life that are like this, when people are not exposed to counter viewpoints or other viewpoints, and when they are, they immediately become defensive, and then question your motives and your intentions, and then begin to demonize you who question their viewpoints. That's how this seems to transpire. It seems to evolve this way, and you can look at Candace Owens, you can look at Tucker Carlson and some others. They seem to get isolated, and they only surround themselves with people that agree with them on everything. And then people who don't agree with them, they immediately begin demonizing them, questioning their motives, saying that they're against free speech, etc. And so they don't actually counter, right, the assertion or the argument. Instead, they just continue to isolate. And that seems to be what has happened with Tucker Carlson. We'll play this clip. This is actually within the last 48 hours, where Tucker Carlson interviews Nick Fuentes, well-known podcaster. Fuentes has a pretty large following, mostly younger men. And by the way, just to know who we're talking about here, Fuentes once said, and there was some profanity in the clip, so we didn't bring it on. Although profanity seems to be the norm now on these podcasts, which is very sad. But Fuentes once said that, quote, "Hitler was a pedophile, but he was also really cool," end quote. So this guy, and there's countless other statements like this, but Fuentes once said, quote, "Hitler was a pedophile, but he was also really cool." All right. This is the person who's responsible for the slaughter, for the murder of millions of Jews. All right. So Fuentes goes on Tucker Carlson's podcast and to compare the environments. And Dinesh D'Souza has this X post that is pretty revealing. And here's what D'Souza said. "Plato once described the dog as friendly to its owner and hostile to strangers. Tucker is friendly to guys like Nick Fuentes and hostile to guys like Ted Cruz. Tucker poses as a dog, quote, asking questions, but we know what kind of dog he is based on whose rear end he likes to sniff." That's from Dinesh D'Souza. And so Tucker brings on Ted Cruz, doesn't let him talk, interrupts him, makes general assertive statements that are not fact-based, accuses Senator Cruz of being a puppet of Israel, a puppet of the Jews, and then he brings on Nick Fuentes, who called Hitler cool, admitted he's a pedophile, he was a pedophile, and then said he's a cool guy, and gives the most friendly softball interview that you've ever seen. And so it's not as if Carlson brings on anybody and everybody who wants to debate, right? And then, you know, they go back and forth and have their arguments in the name of free speech. No. Tucker Carlson, when he has people on he disagrees with, he badgers them, he mocks them, he laughs at them, he dismisses them. And then when he has on people that he likes, he gives these softball two-hour interviews, gives them lead-in questions. That's the way it works. This is how he operates. And so let's listen to clip four, where Tucker Carlson in the last 48 hours said that that he despises Christians who support Israel. Clip four.
How do you explain Mike Huckabee, Ted Cruz, and there are a lot like that, John Bolton. I mean, I've known them all. George W. Bush, like the Karl Rove. I mean, all people I know personally who I've seen like be seized by this brain virus, and they're not Jewish. Most of them are self-described Christians. And then the Christian Zionists who are, well, Christian Zionists. Like, what is that?
Right.
And I can just say for myself.
What is that?
I dislike them more than
I don't know, you answer it.
Anybody. You know, because like what? Because it's Christian heresy and I'm offended by that as a Christian. That's why.
Okay. Cue that back up and I'll call for it in a few minutes. Because there's a lot there and I don't want to dismiss it. I don't want to gloss over it. And I did interrupt him because I was laughing. But and look, I'm pulling Tucker Carlson's approach. I'm just laughing at it. So that was a lot, by the way. But that was Tucker Carlson essentially stating that he despises more than anyone, he says, I despise Christian Zionists. Those are his words. Christians who support Israel, who are supportive of the state of Israel and the Jewish people. And then he goes through his name dropping, Mike Huckabee, John Bolton, Ted Cruz, et cetera, which that was a pretty, by the way, a pretty diverse list of people. Those were not all like the same people, the same type people. I mean, Mike Huckabee, John Bolton, no, it's not even close. I mean, these are people who have varying viewpoints. This is not all monolithic. But you see, he drops it like it is, like these are all just the same people. No. And so then Carlson, he says, quote, this is the strategy. Listen to this. Carlson makes the assertion that he despises Christian Zionists. Then he says, and what is that? Those are his words. See, this is not intellectual. This is actually not very impressive. Maybe it's good entertainment. Maybe it gets good podcast downloads. Maybe, because our populace is also not very intellectual. But why would you make a statement, an affirmative statement that I despise, this is quote Tucker Carlson, I despise more than anyone Christian Zionist, and then he names drops everybody. And then he says, and what is that? I don't know. You tell me. Tucker Carlson, you just came up with Christian Zionist like it's a bad word. It sounds like the same people that say you're a Christian nationalist. And then you got to go on defense and talk about why you're not a Christian nationalist. But he uses Christian Zionist, not Christians who support Jews or Christians who support Israel. No, he's got to use the toxic word, Zionist. That's what the anti-Semites use. They use the Hamas. They use Zionist. That's the language that Hamas uses. And so Tucker Carlson says Christian Zionist, and then he goes, "And what is that?" Wait. So you're going to make an affirmative statement about how you despise people, and then you end your affirmative statement by saying, and what is that? Please define it, Tucker Carlson. See how, like, how do you even, as an intellectual, begin to pick that apart? And you can't go on Tucker Carlson's show, no, because he'll shout you down and he'll laugh at you. That's what he did to Ted Cruz. Thought he was going to go into Tucker Carlson's podcast and have a very interesting two-hour, three-hour debate about this issue of Israel and the Christian faith, and how does theology play in here, and what about the Old Testament and the New Testament? How does it all go together? What about the New Testament church? How should we view Israel and the Jewish people? No, 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 but that's not what you got with the Ted Cruz sit-down. It's just unfortunately not what you got. And so I want us to listen to this one more time, but this is Tucker Carlson talking about how he despises, quote, more than anyone, Christian Zionists. Let's listen.
How do you explain Mike Huckabee, Ted Cruz, and there are a lot like that, John Bolton. I mean, I've known them all, George W. Bush, like the Karl Rove. I mean, all people I know personally who I've seen like be seized by this brain virus, mm-hmm. and they're not Jewish. Most of them are self-described Christians. And then the Christian Zionists mm-hmm. who are, well, Christian Zionists, like, what is that?
Right.
And I can just say for myself, I dislike them more than anybody, you know, because like, what? Because it's Christian heresy and I'm offended by that as a Christian. That's why.
All right. So brainwash. And brain rot, the pro-Israel viewpoints, brain rot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I dislike them more than anyone. Christian Zionist, what is that?
But we're the heretics.
Yeah, and then he makes the kind of the mic drop of it's heretical. Not I disagree with them, or I have a different view of you know, theology and end times and prophecy and the role of Israel. Yeah, and
he hates them.
Yeah.
Hate. No, it's a good Christian viewpoint.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, but this is where we are, and Tucker's got a huge following. That's why we're bringing it up. And I want to play this last clip. This is Dinesh D'Souza, who is actually does a way better job than me articulating kind of this way of operating of Tucker Carlson and why it's problematic. Clip 3.
Tucker doesn't even purport to be knowledgeable about anything. So as a result, what Tucker says is, yes. I will develop a ventriloquist style. I have strong opinions, but I don't want to defend any of them. So I will set up a structure in which I bring in sources, often rather dubious sources, people you've never heard of, mm-hmm. you know, the nun with the mustache, some disgraced academic. And what I'll do is I will ask sort of leading questions that in which is embedded an answer, my answer, but it framed as a question. You then will blurt out the obvious implications of the question, giving me the answer I expected, but I will pretend to be thunderstruck by it. It's an epiphany, it's a new revelation. People have been suppressing this kind of thinking for decades. So this is a shtick. It's a different shtick than Candace. Candace's shtick is the Candace Intelligence Agency. I'm like the world's greatest detective. You know, I'm the Pink Panther of my time. I'm deputizing all my viewers also to be detectives. Feed me information. We're going to crack the case. So to me, this is like an intellectual embarrassment, because all my life I've been an iconoclast. I will take on ideas and I will try to dismantle them, but not in this way. My ideas are things like this. The Dixiecrats all became Republicans. And my strategy of challenging that is I go make an inventory of the 200 Dixiecrats. I put them up on a movie screen and I say, all right, I'm now going to show you through a movement of the mouse, which of these 200 Dixiecrats became Republicans? Answer 2. So did the Dixiecrats as a group become Republicans? No. There's the empirical evidence right there on the screen. You can check it out, you know, for yourself. So when I see this almost parody of investigation, parody of scholarship, it's very unnerving.
Yes, it is quite unnerving. Quite unnerving. And folks, you can go on your own and look up the viewpoints and the statements, the historical viewpoints and statements of Nick Fuentes. Do it for yourself. Don't rely on me. Do it for yourself. And by the way, very vile statements about Charlie Kirk, the late Charlie Kirk. Very vile statements have come from Nick Fuentes. Very vile. And Tucker Carlson not just platforms him, because that's platforming is not in and of itself a wrong thing to do, even platforming people you disagree with. But bringing Nick Fuentes on and giving him 120 minutes of softball questions, not hard pressing, is a problem. It's not intellectual and it's not honest. See you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.